This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Representative Jeremy Thiesfeldt of Fond du Lac was elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly representing the 52nd Assembly District in 2010, a career teacher. He's chaired the influential Assembly Education Committee since 2015. And during his tenure as chair, he's been at the forefront of education policy on issues such as funding, academic standards, testing, school report cards, just to name a few. He joins us today because in December he announced that he's leaving his job in Madison. We're going to find out today if he's returning to the classroom to be a teacher or what his plans are for the future. But thank you for joining us, Representative Thiesfeldt.
Well, glad to be here.
So you've been in this job for more than a decade now. What have you learned about policymaking in Madison during that time?
I've learned that it's really hard. For my first 10 years, first 8 years, we had a Republican governor, completely Republican legislature, and even then it was hard. The impression the public has is that we were just able to pump out Republican-leaning conservative legislation left and right. But even then, there were challenges. There was not agreement on everything, but I think we got a lot done during those periods of time, and we put through some legislation that was very important for getting the state on the right track financially. The biggest thing that I would say that I have learned during that period of time is that you have to be able to work with your colleagues, and that means all of them. And so politics, I've always said, is the art of relationships. And so if you are able to have positive relationships with your colleagues in the legislature, regardless of whether you're on the same side of the aisle or not, I think you're going to be able to find some common ground and be able to produce some positive legislation for the people of Wisconsin. And that would be one of the goals I had coming in, and I hope I've succeeded in that regard.
Do you feel like you have friends and colleagues on the other side of the aisle then?
I think so. I mean, when you think about friends, when I leave here, I don't know that I'm going to have communication, like best friend sort of communication with legislators, but I've made a lot of friends here that I will be able to have conversations with and reminisce with for many years to come. But as I believe should happen with legislators, is you come in, you serve, and you go back to the life you had before, and that's what I intend to do.
Okay. Well, we're talking about things that you've learned. You have been a lifelong teacher, and that quickly really became your identity in the legislature. We talked about you being the chair of the Assembly Education Committee. What do you see as the biggest change in education over the last 10 years? It seems like there's been a lot of change.
I think that without a doubt, in the state of Wisconsin, which I assume is the focus of your question, it would be the expansion of the school choice program. And the growth of charter schools as well, which I will say, and this was very clear when I first was campaigning, I came in with the intent of expanding the choice program.
You think that's a positive change?
Yes, yes, certainly. I think it's very important that we give people as many choices to attend good schools as they can possibly have. And if a school is doing good work in raising children, assisting parents and raising their children to understand life in our country, why should we keep them from attending that school? It's beneficial for the state of Wisconsin to spend tax dollars on a good school, whether it's a private school or a public school.
One of the more recent Marquette Law School polls asks Wisconsinites that question about their support for expansion of Wisconsin's voucher program. I think it's 58% of Wisconsinites say they would like to see statewide expansion of the voucher program without income limits. Do you have a prediction on what will happen with Wisconsin's voucher program in the next 10 years?
Well, that's going to depend on who the governor is. Tony Evers has made it clear throughout his time in Department of Public Instruction as well as his time in governor, and he's exhibited that with the vetoes that he's put on some of the legislation that's been brought forward, that he is not supportive of the school choice program. And so as long as he's governor, I would assume that that's going to continue that way. The legislature, I can tell you, from the majorities that we have, is strongly in support of expansion of the program. The Republican governor candidates, as best as I can tell, have publicly stated that they are in favor of expansion of the program to get rid of some of the limitations that currently exist. So within 10 years, I don't know if we see the complete expansion. If I was sticking around, I certainly would be pushing for that. But that's going to depend on the mix of the next group that comes in. And
you think that's what's right for Wisconsin's future of
yes,
education?
Yes, I do. I think it's not only the future here. You're seeing this nationwide. It's not just a trend in Wisconsin. And people are demanding more choices. And it isn't just in education. I mean, I think you can look at all aspects of society, and people are demanding more choices. And education is certainly one of the foremost in their mind.
One of the other things you've been particularly focused on and concerned about in Wisconsin are student test scores. We are looking at some reading test scores that DPI released in October, and they are not getting better. Let's just say that. The graph displays a percentage of students who tested as proficient and not proficient in English language arts on the Forward and Dynamic Learning Maps exams in 2020-2021, includes students grade through 8. 33.7%, about a third, are proficient, 53% not proficient. To what do you attribute Wisconsin's lagging test scores?
My belief on that is that I believe that we have most public schools in the state, which is, you know, frankly, there are private schools too, but most students are in a public school, are heavily invested in a reading instruction methodology that has been scientifically proven to not succeed. I think back when you and I went to school, we probably were trained to read in a phonics-based method. Now, sometimes people just, when they hear phonics-based, they get this impression that that's all you do is phonics, and that isn't the case. It's phonics-based. This has proven to be the superior method. Science has shown it over the years, and there is currently a large push nationwide to shift back towards a phonics-based approach.
So Wisconsin's behind.
Yes, we are. And that is why I've been pushing for this for several years, that we need to start, and it starts in our colleges of education.
How we train teachers.
We need the UW system in particular to start adopting these systems. And if they're not going to do it, you know, I don't want to force them to do it, but there are times where we're the legislature for a reason. We pass laws, and if agencies such as the University of Wisconsin system are not doing things that we, the legislature, thinks are beneficial for the people, then it's our obligation and our duty to pass things to change that. And so we've been trying to do that, but at this point, Governor Evers has not been willing to join us in that battle, which is very disappointing. Because
he talks about lack of funding for schools and too much testing happening.
Yes, and
do you agree with any of that?
Well, the testing part I would agree
with.
There's
too much testing.
Yes. And I think the problem with the testing is the type of testing that's being done. Mm. We have to do the Forward exam, the one that everybody does in the spring. Well, the problem with that is it's not that it's bad information that you get, but you can't turn that information around until I think it comes out in November. So they take it in the spring, and we don't get the results for 6 months.
It doesn't help teachers adjust.
And so the focus on testing needs to be on things that can be turned around quickly into the classroom. I mean, there are tests out there that can be taken. They're short. They can be done in half an hour. They do them 2-3 times a year, and the teacher can literally have that information in their hands and be starting to apply that information to help their students learn better really the next day.
Sounds like you feel like there's some unfinished business with the literacy work, but you're leaving the legislature. Do you intend to keep engaged on these issues?
Well, to a certain extent. I've told my colleagues that I mean, one of the things that is actually kind of a rarity in the legislature are teachers, people who have experience in the classroom. Now, when I taught elementary, but it was, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. Did that for 10 years, and then I did 12 years of high school where we weren't really teaching reading. And going back to that now again, so I don't have a great deal of expertise in teaching kids how to read, but I know lots of people who do, including my wife. And I know what the science says, and that's what I've tried to leave my colleagues with, is that here are some key things we need to get done. Reading methodology is one of them. Expansion of school choice is another one, to give people choices, because frankly, if you have a school that just is refusing to accept the science, what choices do you have? They're pretty limited, and so we need to open that up to them. And I'm willing to come back and help out with these things. I've made that clear to them too, and we'll see if they take me up on the offer or not.
Not going away on those issues. Speaking of another important education issue, 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic, certainly schools, districts were on kind of the front lines of the state's response to the pandemic. What do you see as the long-term impacts of the pandemic on our schools and on our kids? Are you concerned about that?
I think the biggest long-term impact is absences. And I don't mean just the absence that we dealt with because of the pandemic, where kids were doing school online and all this. I mean going forward, even if we were to catch up, somehow catch kids up to where they should be, which incidentally they were behind to begin with, and now they're even further behind. But let's say we were able to catch them up to where they should be. We still have the issue that schools are very sensitive, and I think this applies to both public and private, that when students get sick, that they stay home. And the school that I've gone back to now, I've seen this as well, where you have kids in a semester who are piling up anywhere between 15 and 20 absences. And it's one of those things where, you know, how do you deal with this? You, in order to learn effectively, the best way to do that is to actually be in school for, you know, 90% plus of the students.
That? What are your ideas on changing that?
I don't have any at this point yet, but it's something that all schools are going to struggle with, because if you miss certain amount of classes, you know, you're kind of really not taking the class. And how can you learn? How can, as a particularly high school, how can you give that student credit if they're not showing up for school?
So you're saying that issue has even gotten worse since the pandemic with kids missing school.
Yeah, I mean, you always had a few students who you'd have to deal with, because they'd pile up a lot of absences and you'd have to make special concessions for them and give them extra help. But it's a lot of them now. And I don't know where this ends up, because I think we have fundamentally changed what attendance in school means.
If you could change one thing about public education now, what would it be?
Focus much more on what school's original mission is, and that is educating students in the basics of reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, here are the three R's, but really that is what I think we've gotten away from. And people will disagree with me on what level this should be at, but I believe that our schools have become much more focused on social sort of issues, and because there's only so many hours in the day, those hours have to be spent somehow, or that have to be spent on other sorts of somewhat non-academic issues. That takes away from their reading class, their math class, their science class, their social studies class. And I think that that's part of what those scores dropping we're seeing.
I think other people might say, well, kids are coming to school with more complicated lives and issues and different, you know, kind of even mental health issues that make the need to do other things in school.
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly. And that is a very tough issue to have to deal with, and it's being dealt with in public schools as well as private schools. And I think this also comes down to, as a society, strengthening that family unit and getting parents to understand. You heard me say it earlier in the interview here. I said schools assisting parents in the education of their child. That's how it really should be. It seems we've switched that. and somehow the parents are assisting schools. That's not it. The parents have the responsibility for educating the child, and the school assists them. I think we need to focus on that aspect of it and build up families across the state, empower them. All of the people showing up at school board meetings, while that has been a difficult transition, I think, for school board members, ultimately, I think this is just great.
More engagement.
Because we have, yes, we have the people showing up at these meetings. I spent 6 years on a city council where most of the meetings, hardly anybody showed up. What a great thing that we have the people re-engaged again. And it may have been a difficult period of time to go through, but I would just stress to people that you need to keep going to those meetings.
You know, speaking of parent role in education, a lot of people think that that issue will be big in the coming elections this fall, and certainly in other states, the Virginia gubernatorial race is an example where the role of parents in education really was an issue that became a theme in that race. The Marquette poll in February asked a question of Wisconsin voters related to that. They asked who should have the biggest role in determining public school curriculum. 35% of those respondents said parents, and then that was followed by 33% teachers, 13% school boards, 9% superintendents, 5% for legislators. Do you think that currently in Wisconsin parents have enough say on what's being taught in schools for their kids?
I think that varies from district to district. You have some districts where the parents are, and I think this probably leans toward the larger districts, that you have parents are kind of more distant from those decisions. When you have the scenario where you've got a small school district and the school board members are part-time and they might live across the street from you, I think the parents feel a little, maybe a lot more involved in that process. The media, I think, plays into this as well with the death of newspapers across the country. And this is my local newspaper as well. There's not much reporting going on because they don't have the staff to do it. There's not much reporting going on what's going on locally. People have kind of turned to social media for that. And with social media, you can kind of narrow your focus of what you see to what you like, what you want to see. And so that whole dynamic has changed. And as far as our parents, in terms of the polling, who should really have that authority, I mean, ultimately it comes down to the parents. Now, I'm not saying that they should be involved in every detail of what's going on. That's, you know, the teachers are the professionals who are ones who are being paid to do that. But ultimately the parents are the ones who are voting for the school board members. So the parents are the boss. And that's pretty much the case in private schools also. And I think something that has been lost, and this stretches back to way before I was in the legislature, you know, think back to when we were in school years ago, that there were PTAs, PTOs, parent-teacher organizations, and they were literally involved in almost every aspect of the educational process.
That's not as much anymore.
And they don't. They have bake sales to buy new football helmets, and that's pretty much all they do. Now, I don't think that the school boards necessarily pushed them out. I think it was kind of this unwritten sort of agreement. A lot of moms went back into the workforce, whereas before they weren't, and so there just wasn't as much time available to get invested in those sorts of things, and it just kind of all fell
on
the
parents come back
the teachers
and re-engaged.
Back. Yes, I think that when it's all said and done, people will look back at this period of time and notice that, you know, it kind of became that the teachers and the administrators were running the show, which in some ways is appropriate, the day-to-day actions of it. But when changes needed to be made, the best place for that to be driven from are the people who really are the boss, and that's the parents. Mm-hmm. And so if they see things they don't like, they're showing up at the school board meetings, and I hope that they would continue to do that, because frankly, that's why we have public open meetings.
You know, shifting just a little bit, we talked about education as an election issue. You you have been an outspoken critic on how the 2020 election was handled. You said that the election system in Wisconsin lacks the most basic essential element, the confidence of a wide majority of the electorate. Do you hear that back in the district? Are people still concerned about trust in the election system?
Yes, yes, 100%.
How can that be fixed?
That, I think, an election that is run that isn't filled with all sorts of questions. Whether that can happen this fall or not, I'm not sure. I think we've largely had successful spring elections, but as you know, spring elections don't really carry the fire and the weight that the fall elections hold, because then you're getting into a partisan election. The springs are nonpartisan. And
is it your hope that trust can be restored then?
Oh, yeah, certainly. But I think that there is a good chunk of the population who has seen some of the issues of the last election and are demanding changes. And at this point, we have not had the governor willing to sign on with those changes. If Tony Evers is not reelected, you can be pretty certain some of those changes will be brought up again, and I would assume a new governor will sign them.
And you think that will help?
But that, I think, is certainly going to help. And you know, there are certain things there that they're not outlandish things that are being asked for. You know, we shouldn't be having independent organizations throwing millions of dollars toward certain cities that strongly lean towards one political party in their vote. Okay, it's not too much to ask that we fund our own elections with tax dollars. I don't think it's too much to ask that, you know, Madison had their, what did they call it, their day in the park where you could bring your ballots in. I think that was pretty much a clear violation of the law. You know, that's not too much to ask.
So that would help to kind of answer questions that
yes.
you've received
you
from
know,
there, your there's, voters.
There's too much absentee balloting going on. Democracy is hard work. Okay, now I say democracy loosely because I'm a government teacher, so we really don't have a pure democracy. But just as a euphemism for what we have, democracy is hard work. And the people who are participants in it, they need to be willing to engage in that hard work. And so I very much do not believe we just need to make everything so easy for everybody. Okay, when you make things just easier and easier and easier, we have seen that just opens up for fraud, or if not fraud, potential of fraud, and then that leads to the lack of confidence on people. And we need both sides engaged in elections, Republicans and Democrats. I don't want to do anything to cause Democrats not to vote, mm-hmm. even though I'm a Republican, and I would hope that they would think likewise.
Speaking of hard work, you've been in your job for more than a decade. We've talked a lot about the education issues that you are passionate about. What do you consider, other than education, some of your proudest accomplishments? What are you leaving mm-hmm. saying, I did that well?
Yeah, well, I think that I worked with you on a few of these things in your previous job. I came into the legislature with this belief. One of my core beliefs in government is that government exists to help those who cannot help themselves or have challenges in helping themselves, people who are unrepresented. And so I have always tried to put some focus on people who had some vulnerabilities, so people who have disabilities of some sort, whether it be a small disability or a severe disability. Children in particular, you know, they don't get to vote for school boards. Somebody needs to speak for them. Human trafficking victims. I got a big bill passed on that to require driver instruction. Truckers, you know, truckers are the eyes of the road out mm-hmm. there, and they see stuff, and when they stop at truck stops, they stay overnight, they see a lot of this human trafficking stuff going on, and so I wanted them to be able to understand what are the signs that's occurring, and so we required that to be included as part of truck driver education, that they'd study a component of that to understand how they can recognize it. So, you know, those groups like that, another one, this was a small bill, but a victim of children are frequently victims of having their identity stolen because their identities are, nobody really pays much attention to them when they're younger. And so they're targets for that. So we got a child identity protection bill passed. Sexual assault victims was our most recent one here, where we set up a system
of
tracking the rape kits as they go through the process. So, you know, people like that, I particularly wanted to look to help, because they are oftentimes the voiceless in society. And I would hope those would be some of the things I'd be remembered for.
What are you going to miss about being in the legislature?
Oh, boy. Well, for one, I think coming to the Capitol building, just being able to see that building as I drive up East Washington, and then see it in the rearview mirror as I go home, and thinking that, wow, 52nd District office is in that building, and I get to go to that office and represent the people of Fond du Lac. I mean, what a fabulous place to be. I've been able to meet so many unique and interesting people on both sides of the aisle. We mentioned friendships earlier. I mean, these are friendships that'll last a lifetime, and I certainly intend to keep in touch with some of these people, as many of them as I can. But, you know, 10 years from now, when I bump into somebody, I would hope that they would recognize me as a friend and someone that they can have a discussion with, just as I hope they feel the same way right now.
Have you missed being a classroom teacher? Will we expect to see you back in the school?
Yes. I'm from day one, when I got in the legislature, I've answered that the same way. I didn't leave the classroom because of any disenchantment with teaching. I was perfectly happy teaching Phi Ed every day. I got to wear sweatpants to school every day. How can you go wrong with that? And so I left because I just felt I had the skills that were necessary to get into the legislature, and I figured I'd learn a lot. I like to learn things. And so I'm going back to the classroom. I actually started back December 1st on a part-time basis, and I'm actually back at the school I was at previously.
So you think you'll be a full-time teacher?
I will be. Actually, I'm full-time right now, but I'm just doing administrative work. I'm the guidance counselor and the registration coordinator for Winnebago Lutheran Academy, which is a high school in Fond du Lac. It's where I was before, and they needed help, frankly, because the previous person who had my job passed away unexpectedly last summer. And so they needed somebody to come in, and I was willing to fill that role for them. But next school year, I get to go back to teaching one of the old classes I had. Very fittingly, I get to teach government class.
Well, so, and now you're an expert. You know, there is a teacher shortage, which I know you are well aware of, the university system putting out fewer teaching degrees, teachers, when they're asked, major problems with burnout, a lot of early retirements. What do you think attributes to the teacher shortage?
Well, some of it is driven by dissatisfaction of the parents with school. I think the surveys out there will show you, and this is not across the board, but I think it's generally speaking, when satisfaction surveys are done, the parents that are in the private schools and the schools in the choice program exhibit a higher level of satisfaction than they do with public schools. And so when people tell me that there's a large percentage of public school teachers are leaving, and that kind of explains it, because those parents are probably being harder on their schools than what they are in the other schools.
So it's more difficult for teachers to deal with
it
is. Parents.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I'm stepping back into that environment. And like I said, the parents are the boss, so you need to be responsive to them. I'm not certain that kids have really changed all that much. I think parents maybe have changed more than the kids have. But that's who the boss is, and you have to meet that level of expectation that they have.
And you're ready to get back into this changed education
environment. Yes, I'm 55 years old when some teachers are retiring, and I'm going back. I'm anxious to get back into the classroom. I think I have the skills to do it yet. Actually just earlier today, I had some of the students from my school came to the Capitol for a visit, so I was taking them around the Capitol.
It reminded you of what you missed about it.
Yeah.
You know, the last question I want to ask you talk about your faith. You mentioned your faith in your retirement announcement. How has that, your Christian faith, played into your role as a legislator?
Yeah, well, that's the most important thing to me. You know, faith, family, country. That's the order I look at things. And when I came into office, you know, you kind of set yourself goals. of what you want it to look like when you leave office. So what do you want people to remember you for? And I truly believe that, you know, years from now when people look back, if anybody can remember that I was actually in the legislature, that it won't be so much the bills that I got passed and so forth, that it will be more so of a focus on the fact that I hope I was successful in having positive relationships with my colleagues, and that I carried myself as a redeemed child of Christ, as I, not just in office, but those times when the camera is not on too. I'd like to think that I was the same person before the legislature as I was during my time in the legislature as I'm going to be afterwards, and that people would have noticed that. I would like my legacy to be that of I'm a sinner and I'm in need of the blood of Jesus Christ for forgiveness of my sins, just like everybody else is, and I would hope that I'm a reflection of his work for me in my time in the legislature.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for your time in the legislature, and we wish you the best in what comes next. Thank you for joining us, and thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we sit down with the decision makers and highlight the issues that impact all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.